From the heart of rural France, this is the Keto Woman podcast, brought to you by me. Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. I've been keto now for over 2 years and it has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs under 20 grams a day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds and the incidental carbs you find in things like full fat dairy. Choose delicious fatty proteins and be free and easy with oily dressings on salad and butter on your veggies. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalized keto. You'll hear all sorts of ways to keto from my guests. There is no one way to do keto, no one size fits all. I hope to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we really can't give you medical advice. It's always best to consult your own doctor when making big changes to your diet and lifestyle, because they know you and your medical history, and so have access to the bigger picture. Wouldn't it be helpful to have one place where you could find all the links? Want to sign up to my new Patreon-exclusive Facebook group, Daisy's Lovelies? No problem. How about subscribing to my YouTube channel? Please help me notch up my first 1,000 subscribers by going to links.ketowomanpodcast.com and following the YouTube link. Not following me on Instagram yet? Hit the Instagram button. You get the idea. All the buttons, all the links you need are at links.ketowomanpodcast.com.
Is this thing on?
You could edit that into some nice video right there. I'll leave that alone.
Matt.
That was most of our keto crew, as Matt calls it. Sadly, Terry Lance couldn't join us due to a schedule clash. She did actually pop in at the end for a top tip, but due to technical issues, we lost the recording. Ugh. We tried, Terry. We missed you. Welcome to episode number 130 and another crossover with Kim Howerton's Keto Life Support podcast. We thought it would be nice to get together for a chat about how we are all coping in our own little corners of the globe during this COVID crisis. Why do they say corners? How can you have corners to a globe? Anyway, join us and our buddies for a chat. Probably unsurprisingly, it was a long recording, so I have split it into two so that you don't have too long a listen, but also to save my editing sanity. Have you any idea how time-consuming it is to edit 5 audio streams? Talking of which, Louise's audio is horrible. I'm sorry. I reached the limits of my editing know-how and couldn't get it any better. I don't know what the issue is. I suspect an aircon fan. Sorry about that. Heads up that we touch on things here and there that some people won't like. There's a smidge of politics and a whole lot of COVID stuff, obviously, because that is the topic. I had a lot of fun recording it and listening again during the edit, and so I do hope you decide to join in. Welcome to the Keto Woman podcast and
Keto Life Support.
We're doing another crossover.
We are indeed. I am Kim Howerton, and this is the lovely
Daisy Brackenhall.
Daisy, you're the lovely one.
Oh, am I? Thank you.
Yes.
And we brought some friends again.
We did indeed. We have got Louise. Say hello, Louise.
Hi. G'day, everybody.
We got Matt.
Hello, hello.
And John.
Well, hello, everybody.
We're all great buddies. We chat all the time, don't we?
We do.
We do.
We do.
All the time.
And I think both of our podcast listeners know Kim and I by now. but they may not know Louise. Keto Women podcast listeners are very familiar with Louise, but yours might not be so much, Kim. And nobody yet knows Matt and John. So perhaps we could have a bit of an intro from the three of you.
Yeah, hopefully the listeners of my podcast know who I am.
I would hope so.
I hope. So Louise, why don't you jump in and do a little intro? Because I know that Daisy's listeners know you, and I assume my listeners know you too. Everyone should know Louise, but why don't you give a little intro?
Oh, thank you, Kim. And thank you, Daisy. It's really good to be back here. And really good to be with everybody, with the gang, our Keto Fest gang. My name is Louise Reynolds, and I'm an Australian, actually living in Bangkok, Thailand at this time. For Daisy's listeners, they've been following my travels from Australia to the UK, and I'm now based in Bangkok, Thailand. I came over in December.
I think when we recorded last time, you were just about to think about packing up and heading off.
Yes, that seems like eons ago, because moving continents and having to pack up the house, and the three young men now, the boys had to all find alternate accommodation. And it's just Andrew and I, the sort of empty nesters or double income, no kids. We're not quite sure which phase of our relationship we're in here in Thailand. Andrew has a posting for 3 years, so we're going to be here for 3 years in Bangkok with the embassy. So he's been posted to the embassy for 3 years. So as far as my keto story, Daisy and I are metabolically challenged twins. We have parallel journeys with being, overweight women who underwent weight loss surgery.
We were almost exactly the same weight, weren't we, when we started?
And I think our surgeries were similar,
same.
Our sleeve surgeries, but have really successfully used low-carb keto, carnivore, and every variation in between to keep off 130 pounds or 60 kilos. But as we're all in isolation and quarantine at the moment, those COVID kilos might be creeping back, but I'm sure we'll have a discussion about that.
Super.
And what about you, Matt?
I'm Matt. I live in Delaware, which is on the eastern coast of the United States in the Mid-Atlantic, very little state. I've known John for 20 some odd years, and everyone else I met through keto, our keto crew. I am married. I have three daughters, dog, a cat, and some fish. I got into keto. Actually, John brought me into keto. He tried to, and I didn't decide it was something I wanted to do until I got diagnosed with diabetes and metabolic syndrome and all those fun things. So I found another podcast. I don't know if we're name dropping, and I met everybody there, became an admin over there.
You can name drop.
You can name drop. Yeah.
So that was the two keto dudes with Carl and Richard. So that's where I met everybody. We were all admins there. And I managed to basically get rid of my diabetes and metabolic syndrome through diet. So that's kind of where we are right now. I do agree with Lou. It's easy to, eat some of the crap my kids are eating sometimes. I did have pizza, full confession. We got pizza one night. We ordered in. But I'm doing good. Everything. I keep up with my doctor. Everything's managed. I'm glad to be here. Known about your guys' podcast for a while. So it's fun to finally be here for a while. I also have a business with John that I'll let him elaborate on, but we can touch on that as well. So, hey, everyone.
Well, I'm also going to interview you two guys in more detail and we can talk a lot more about that business then. So, obviously mention it now, but we'll share a lot more about that a bit later on.
Okay. How about it, John?
Hi, my name is John, and I live in Maryland. I'm formerly of Delaware, and am still when I cross over the state line to get out of my neighborhood. And I actually started with paleo back in 2014. Actually, in 2013, I was having a Christmas party, and I was looking for a recipe for appetizers, and I happened upon a website that had a very good recipe that I decided to try. And I read a little bit more about the guy's story, and he had some autoimmune disease And through paleo, he was able to correct his lifestyle. And then I read the book that he recommended, and I started to eat more of a paleo and try to get Matt and his wife to eat more that way as well. And anytime I would cook over their house, I would cook with paleo ingredients. And I was overweight by about 50 pounds. I don't know what that comes out to in kilos. I guess about 100 maybe.
That's the other way.
No, the other way.
About 18, something like that.
Oh, the other way. So, okay, 25. Oh, okay, 18 kilos.
Sounds so better.
So I was able to lose about 20 pounds eating paleo, but that was over a course of about almost 2 years. And then when Matt got diagnosed with type 2 diabetes and he started eating keto, it was just a little bit more of an adjustment for me. But I was able to then get back down to fighting weight. I was able to lose the other 25 pounds that I needed to lose. And even with the COVID calories that I'm ingesting, I'm still able to keep my weight down to within a range that is comfortable for me.
Good deal. So, you know, just a little bit more background. There's actually really more six of us, but the five of us here, poor Terry had an alternate plan this morning. She couldn't make the call because we equally love her, but we are all
time zone dramas.
Yeah. So I'm in California. Lou is in, where are you, Lou? Bangkok?
Yeah, Bangkok, Thailand.
Daisy is in France, even though she sounds like she's in England. And Matt and John are on the East. Would you still call that East Coast? No, you're not quite to the coast.
It's East Coast, but Mid-Atlantic is what it's Delaware's falls into.
Okay, so we're spanning much of the globe, and we thought we could give a little bit of perspective about what it's like for us where we're at. It's excellent because Louise and Daisy are each two-for-oners because they're an Australian living in Bangkok and an English woman living in France, so we get like four for two.
Yeah. You hit the bonus plan.
I always find it really interesting to hear what everyone's situation is, where they are with the whole COVID-19 drama. So I guess I'll kick off as I'm already rambling on. France is on lockdown. We've been on lockdown since the middle of March. It's fairly strict. They started off by closing schools. And I think, as what happened in a lot of places, that first weekend, we had nice weather and everyone went out. Everyone went to the beaches, the parks. Not everyone. Sensible people didn't, but a lot of people did. And so the government clamped down. The following Tuesday, they made it so that you had to produce a document every time you went out and for everything you went out for. So you can go out for shopping for essentials, going for work if you have to, if it can't be done remotely, doctor's visits, things like that. But you have to have one per person and per thing you're going for. It has to be dated. Now it also has to be timed. And you're only supposed to go out one person at a time. If you're caught out without one of these documents, the police will fine you. And that worked reasonably well, but not well enough. So they had to put the fines up. They also had to add restrictions on the exercise because people were, what shall we say, to put it politely, pushing the limits. So now you're allowed to go out on your own for exercise for 1 hour within a kilometer of your house once a day on your own. So it's all fairly strict, but fairly easy for me because I live in the middle of nowhere. It seems to be working, I think. I hope we're not yet at our peak, but I really hope we're approaching it. Every time I think we are, I look at the stats every day for almost everywhere, certainly for everywhere where I know somebody. And Italy and Spain are peaking and leveling off. France is, I don't know, every time I think it might be approaching that, yet high numbers. France were very, very naughty, actually. They didn't include the stats for care homes. Mm. And when they were told they had to, the numbers jumped up a lot. Like, the normal stats are something like 6,000 new cases a day. And in this day in particular, they were 24,000. So that just, yes, very, very naughty. And the stats have been higher since they've been including those numbers. So I think that threw it off quite a lot. But so that's where I'm at in France. The UK is a little bit behind, but heading the same way as everywhere else.
Yeah, I'm in California and specifically the Bay Area in California, where they were kind of ahead of the closures compared to other states. I think we were the first state. And in fact, the Bay Area was even like the mayor here, or the mayors were even ahead of California as a whole by a couple of days. And so at this point, it's been almost a month of shelter in place, as they say. And we don't have the like have to write where we're going. I don't know that they're pulling people over, you know, to see where they're going. There are still cars on the road, but a lot less. There's no more commute traffic. You're allowed to go out to go to the grocery store or what they call, you know, essential things like going to the doctor, going to the pharmacy. And you're allowed to go for a walk like in your neighborhood. Pretty early on, they closed parks and trails. Some trails are still open, but basically anything with a parking lot you can't go to.
That makes sense.
But they're not really enforcing like for people to get in their house if they're like trying to go for a walk or something like that. But it's pretty peaceable here as far as I can tell. I think California maybe has done a fairly good job compared to some other states of managing this early. And so we were one of the first sort of peak states, but it's leveled off quite a bit. And I mean, it's still accelerating, but at a much slower pace than the fear was. We're well under our ICU bed numbers at this time.
Yeah, those graphs I shared with you guys the other day, California was remarkably flat. It looks like you're doing, and this was a prediction, but even right. So, they've got quite a lot of data to predict it on. And it looks like you're doing a really good job, especially compared to some of the other states.
There was a point at which New York and California were on par, and then they really diverged. I mean, I think there are a lot of reasons for that. I don't think it's just, you know, any one thing, but I feel like, not to pat ourselves on the back too much, but I feel like California took it pretty seriously, and so some of those measures are working.
Why do you think that is? Is it because, I mean, you strike me, California's is quite health conscious. Do you think that plays a part?
I think it does. I think we had, like, nobody makes fun of anybody for wearing a mask and gloves here, you know, out in public. I also quite honestly think there is a metabolic component to this disease in terms of its severity. In general, California is, I mean, it still has its problems, but compared to many other states, it is a healthier state. And I think that's helping the morbidity. And I just in general think our government here, I don't know if it's how it was presented, but I think we all, most people I know, got really into like the spirit of making sure that people didn't get sick in their environment.
Yeah, and California is kind of known as a leader in the U.S. for all kinds of things.
Everything.
You know, emissions, yeah, when things need changed.
Oh, really?
California seems to change it first, yeah. Well, and plus they're bigger than a lot of countries.
Mm. So. Right. We are 15% of the United States economy. Or no, 15% of the economy, period. Yeah. Something like that.
So, yeah, people tend to follow California, so it's good to see how well things are going out.
Yeah, the warning labels for California. This is, contains something that is known to cause
everything
cancer.
Everything in California has a label that it's going to give you cancer.
The California Consumer Protection Act. Banks have to disclose. Areas have to disclose the information that they're gathering on you, how they use that information, and give Californians an option to opt out of their information being sold. Which is good. I think California is a leader in the right things to do.
Mm. So yay, Kim.
Some of them.
Yay.
I was born here. It wasn't intentional. It just happened.
So who's next?
All right, well, I'll go. I live in Delaware, very small state. So real early, our governor locked us down. And it's through May 15th. And that was out the gate. So we basically started in the middle of March and got put down on lockdown for 2 months. They've locked down our borders. We have a border with Maryland and a border with Pennsylvania. They've locked those down to keep people from coming into our state because of the arcane alcohol laws that we have in the United States. People are coming into Delaware to buy booze. We go out, walk the dog is about all we do on a daily basis. You can go to supermarkets, drugstores and the like, and you should wear a mask and gloves. And my wife just went out yesterday and somebody laughed at her about it. So there are still people out there that aren't kind of getting what's going on. But the last I looked, Delaware, it said we were past peak. Like Kim said as well, we have not maxed out our ICU situation. So we're under the limits of the hospital, which is good.
Yeah, that graph I saw, it said you peaked around about the 31st of March. Yeah. So really quite early.
Yeah. So, well, we do. And we have a university here with a big engineering lean to it. So we have a lot of international students coming and going. The first outbreak, well, if you want to call it that, the first incidence of COVID in Delaware was at the university. So the university locked down immediately, and then all of the local schools and stuff followed their lead and shut everything down. So Delaware went from everything was on to everything was off. Like, that was our first step. So we shut everything down, and it's been all right. I work from home, so it's not a massive change in how my life has been unfolding. I have three children. They are not keen on it, so it's hard. My youngest is 12. She sees the other kids out playing outside, riding bikes and stuff. So we cave every once in a while and let them go out and ride bikes as long as they're keeping 6 feet, but being kids, then we pull them back in. My oldest is 18 and she wants to go see her boyfriend, and we still haven't figured out any good way to do that. So she's mad at us about that. She wants to go to Wendy's. That's where most of it comes with us, is trying to keep three children entertained on lockdown. So
especially that age, I bet.
Yeah. And John lives within a mile literally of me, but he lives in Maryland and we live in Delaware. So he can't even come in into our state. So it's weird living right here, because basically all the people that live here, I have a friend that lives in Pennsylvania. I have a friend, Dr. John, that lives in Maryland, but we all live within a couple miles of each other. You got to do a lot of song and dance to get around the laws and stuff, but you know, it needs done. And I've had to cancel my vacation. I'm supposed to be in Florida right now. My daughter's supposed to be in Costa Rica literally right now. And that's all got scrapped. Prom got canceled. Graduation got canceled. So, you know, I still feel lucky that I'm healthy and my family's healthy, and I haven't had any change in my job because I worked from home before. So it's hard to complain when I know what a lot of people are going through. It is what it is. I'm doing all right.
It's really hard. I really feel for kids of that age, especially who are transitioning from school to university or changing schools that year when, you know, that end of year is usually so full of fun things, like you say, like prom and just saying goodbye to all your friends.
I saw her prom dress on Facebook, really hard, and I felt she looked so pretty.
She put it on just to parade around the house, and it just so she could say she wore it.
That's all she should.
Yeah, and we just figured out yesterday or so, my middle daughter said that since she can't complete driver's ed, and you have to do that in the state of Delaware now, there's no option B. Her license is going to get pushed out for almost a year.
Hmm.
Wow.
That's major sting when you're 16 years old, you know, you want to get that license and try to get a little freedom. But yeah, so that's she's not going to have her license when she's supposed to. So it's a bunch of weird things you don't think about until it kind of unfolds in front of you, you know, and you're like, oh, this is the new normal, I guess.
Did I read somewhere that Delaware is one of the medical hubs in the country? Lots of medical institutes and research facilities. Am I right on that?
We have a lot of pharmaceutical companies that are based in Delaware.
No, maybe it was that.
Yeah, AstraZeneca. We also have a lot of chemical companies.
Yeah.
We actually have a lot of companies, period, that are based in Delaware.
I was wondering if maybe that affected the policies and how you seem to be quite ahead of it.
I mean, we do. We've got major cancer centers. We've got AI DuPont, which is one of the most prestigious children's hospital in the United States. We've got CHIP, which is just over the border up in Philly. So we're literally 45 minutes from Philly. So we're in the megalopolis, whatever you want to call it. So yeah, people think, oh, you know, Delaware, you live in the sticks, and it's nothing like that. we're in a big East Coast super city.
Delaware has very receptive, like very welcoming laws around business. And so a lot of companies end up being there, or at least they are supposedly there when people found companies.
We are the corporate capital of the United States. We have one building in downtown Wilmington that has tens of thousands of buildings, or tens of thousands of corporations at least, I think, or something, that are registered to that one address.
I do remember you.
So yeah, we're very pro-business. Credit card companies are based here. Yeah, we don't have income tax. I mean, we don't have a sales tax for that reason, because we make all our money off of corporate stuff in Delaware.
Yay. And how about John?
Yeah. How different is it just over the border?
In Maryland, it's actually, as I said, I have to go into Delaware even to leave my neighborhood. But for both Newcastle County, Delaware, there's only three counties in Delaware. There's Newcastle, Sussex, and Kent is in the middle. Kent's okay as far as cases are concerned. I think they're still in just double digits. The last I looked, there was about 500 cases in Newcastle County with 13 deaths. Just over the border in Cecil County, Maryland, we only had, as of yesterday, about 41 cases with one death. So we're relatively low, but I think, as Matt said, that we at least... us, we were very quick to adopt cautionary advice. Matt showed me one graph of New York City and the concentric rings that just went out from New York. And part of the problem is that the folks that were in New York City, they were going out to their different homes. So they were taking, mm-hmm. if they had the virus, they were taking the virus with them. So the Pocono Mountains, I saw a friend on Facebook post that he's up in Maine now. He and his wife had gone there just soon the outbreak started. So I think that that's part of the issue of the concentric rings. But luckily, we did, and especially as individuals, we jumped on board relatively quickly. I remember having a meeting at the Register of Wills for my mom, and that was on March 2nd. And I had gone down to Rehoboth after the meeting just to walk the beach, and then I came back through Dover, and I was going to meet with my sister. But she wasn't off work yet. So I said, well, you know, I'm going to go into the drugstore and get some gloves and some alcohol. And even on March 2nd, that was ahead of the curve. So I have a spray bottle of rubbing alcohol in my car. Anytime I go out, I get back in the car, I spray my hands, I spray my wallet, I spray my phone if I've had my phone with me. Now, if I do go out, I leave the phone in the car, so I'm not even tempted. And I think it's just being very, very conscientious of what you're doing, who you're around, and just being careful, being diligent.
Yeah. Ooh, we were ahead of the curve on toilet paper. We started buying toilet paper early. Everyone was laughing at me because we started buying toilet paper. And then my sister-in-law was calling us like, we're out of toilet paper. And I'm like, yeah, funny now, isn't it? You know, I mean, we're not hoarding it. We're not like those people. But every time we'd go out, if there was a pack, we'd buy a pack just so that, because you still can't hardly find it around here. If you get lucky, you'll find toilet paper. But
yeah, we haven't had that at all. It hasn't. Things like that haven't gone off the shelf.
I think that would actually be interesting to just give a little update on like what are supplies like in our area.
We have meat limits on meat. You could buy, it was like one chicken and one non-chicken product. You can buy a pound of meat at the deli. They limit toilet paper and stuff. But again, if you see it, like my wife found one container of toilet paper, but they're trying to enact like the spacing, how many people can go in and out of stores and stuff. But John was at BJ's the other day, which is a big box outlet. You know, it's like Costco kind of place. They sell stuff in bulk. And he said the line was through the door and stuff because they're trying to force everybody to space out. So people are still, I don't know if you want to call it panic buying, but overreacting, I would say, because it depends on when you hit the store. You know, we seem to have everything except toilet paper almost all the time now. John, I don't know if you'd agree, but that's kind of my take on it.
Yeah, paper products are scarce. You go into BJ's and the whole paper aisle is pretty much empty. Paper towels, toilet paper. I had some toilet paper in my cart and some guy, he didn't accost me, but he came up and he had his hand on my toilet paper and he's like, where did you get this? I'm like, in the toilet paper aisle over there.
Unless he didn't mug you.
I know. That's what I was thinking. Actually, the shame of it is I was talking to a coworker who lives in San Antonio, Texas, and she said in Texas, a lady got stabbed over toilet paper. And that's just ridiculous. I mean, there are so many different options. Someone posted on Facebook a picture of a log and said, you know, toilet paper starter kit or something, which made me think of how much water does it take to make toilet paper? Why don't we just go the European way and have bidets? They make so much more sense.
A lot of people are asking.
The sale of add-on bidets, like there are bidets you can buy to just add to your toilet, they've gotten up significantly.
Yeah. It took me a while to figure out what you were talking about then. I'm like, what are they talking about? B-days.
Yes, B-days. Yes, modular B-days, yes. And there's still no, you can't get wipes or alcohol or hand soap or anything. If you stumble across it, but that stuff's still completely wiped out.
Most toilets in Thailand have those little squirty things by the side, and the water's usually quite nice and warm as well.
It's not an American thing at all. I don't know why we're so behind on that.
It's not here. Literally. And not many places have bidets these days either.
What do you call them? Bidets?
Toilet paper was fine. I haven't seen any empty shelves, but then I don't live in. It's just quite a small town where I am. Mm-hmm. And the only things that are restricted are things that I don't want anyway. Things like rice and pasta and stuff like that. So,
you know, it's Daisy, speaking of your remote area, I have to say I'm very thankful for that, that I do have a yard that I can get out into. In fact, that very first Saturday, which would have been around the 13th or 14th of March, I sat outside all day. I went outside and I said, I think I'll have a fire in the fire pit. And then that was before the lockdown, so Matt was able to come over, and I had made a breakfast over the fire pit, complete with eggs and bacon and sausage. Yeah.
Matt is our, I'm not Matt, you're John. John is an amazing cook.
Oh, like, thank amazing. You.
So is Matt, actually.
Right, damn!
What about Matt?
You know what? That's not the first time. That's fine. That's fine.
Matt's good at cooking the meats, aren't you, Matt? You did some amazing
things. Matt isn't a good cook.
I'm used to it. Talking. I'm used to it.
I'm allowed to talk about John without talking about Matt sometimes. I know you guys are joined at the hip, but...
We have a group of people that we camped with at the Firefly Music Festival, which was down in Dover, Delaware, and... Matt introduced Jazzy Sundays, where he would just put jazz music on. And for some reason, they're crediting me for starting Jazz Sunday. I'm like, that's not me. And Matt's like, it's me. It's like, I don't get credit for anything.
Oh, no. Poor Matt.
What about Louise? We haven't heard from Louise yet. What's it like in Thailand? They were a bit slow to get started.
I think because obviously being so close, you know, being on the in the region, so there was obviously a lot of movement around the Chinese New Year holiday. So leading into the Chinese New Year holiday, we were obviously very concerned with the movement of people. So our sort of flux, even though it started a little bit later, we actually there's a bit of a flow-on effect because China is a major tourist, like there's a lot of tourists that come to Thailand. So we had cases all trickling through from January and February, but the actual restrictions didn't start until sort of early March as well. But the boom in cases didn't start till mid-March. The Thai government is very responsive and very proactive, and every day there's new restrictions. So this week alone, we have now no longer alcohol sales. So alcohol sales have been banned for the next 10 days. So they're very quick to make laws and implement laws, and obviously you have to be on your toes for this sort of thing. So last week we had the introduction of curfews. So we can't go out from 10 p.m. to 4 a.m. So no public transport, no cars, no vehicles, no one's on the streets. Shop hours have been reduced. So parks, gardens, playgrounds, gyms, swimming pools, the shopping centres have all been shut. So supermarkets are still open. And as you rightly said, loads and loads of toilet paper. So you're welcome to come. You may have to be quarantined, but you may not actually get a flight into the country because that stopped the other week as well. So no flights in or out of the country. What they were noticing was a huge trend because there was still a trickle of tourists coming in, and obviously they were still congregating, still partying, not quarantining, and again, they were being fined. Andrew is working from home. So he's embassy staff. So embassy staff are on skeleton now. We did have an offer to be repatriated back to Australia, but we thought it'd be better to stay put in Thailand, seeing as our house has been rented out. Our boys are in share accommodation, so we'd have to sleep on a couch. We sold our cars. So, you know, at least here we've got accommodation.
That would have been a nightmare, wouldn't it? It wouldn't have worked at all.
Yeah, I don't. And the thing is, because Andrew's posted to this embassy, where would we go back? Would we go back to our home state, South Australia, Adelaide, back to family? Is that a risk? You know, the boys are all in share accommodation, so they don't have room for the rents to couch surf. So, yeah, it just was more practical to stay here. So he's working from home. I'm still working online, so online teaching. So that's been a new experience. I'd like to hear from Matt how he copes with working at home with his partner. I don't know. That's a new experience for me, a whole different level of stress. But he does make good coffee. He does make good coffee.
Yeah, being us, we have, well, let's see, one, two, three, four, four PCs in the house, so we can space out. But yeah, when she's down here doing conference calls and I'm doing work about 10 feet away, it can get trying, but you know.
So that's a whole different stress. But anyway, so in terms of supermarkets here in Bangkok, I have a wet market. So if you've ever been to Asian countries, there's the open butchers, so where your pork and fish, and particularly chicken. There is cooked food we can do as on your takeaway. So I can walk, maybe it's just only a couple of hundred meters, so it's not even like a quarter mile, to my local wet market where fresh fruit and vegetable traders are. I can walk a mile to my Big Western supermarket and another mile to the big box, like a big Costco equivalent. Yes, we do actually have the hose, the hosey bidet. So so no toilet paper crisis, paper towel crisis in here. So so no panic scenes.
You've got a huge apartment. We can see it. We're looking at each other on Zoom. Kim, you have a very small apartment, don't you?
I have
and a partner that you have to share it with all the time. How's that going?
Yeah, it's very small here and we don't have really any outdoor like space, which is kind of a bummer. And like, it's in some ways awesome. We're getting along super well and everything's really like great. And at the same time, like there's no space. So working from home is more challenging because you don't want to bother the other person. And like, you know, you're like talking about this whatever topic and like, I'm sure, you know, they could care less. So I think, you know, it's trying to be respectful of the more the like the ear space than anything else. But everything's, you know, I think there's just a certain amount of surrender that has to happen. Like just this is what is, and this is what's going on in terms of like what you can and can't do. I mean, I, you know, I realized all of my hobbies involve shopping, you know, things like that. But in terms of like availability here, you know, the first week was rough in terms of shopping. Like meat was sold out in a lot of stores for when I would go in. But within a couple of days to a week, that seemed to shake out. And now the only thing you can't find here are paper towels and toilet paper. You have to get in line before the store opens to be able to get those. But everything else, like there's a vegetable, there's like a, it's called Monterey Market. There's a market a block away from me that's like, it's like if you put an incredible farmer's market in a building, like they get all the produce from all the local farms and things. It's just a couple blocks, like a block away from me. And that is like super stocked. I shouldn't tell people if you're in the Bay Area. No, it's super stocked and full, but they're only letting like a quarter of the people in that their usual occupancy is. So you have to stand in line outside and you can only go in when somebody comes out. And so that's pretty much what's going on here with the social distancing is causing things to go at a slightly slower pace, but you just kind of put your earbuds in and listen to some music and just wait in line for an hour and you're fine. And so food seems really well handled here in the Bay Area in terms of being able to access what you want. We don't have any limits. I don't know how I would do with a family of five to only be able to buy like 2 pounds of meat. You'd have to go to the store like every day, which seems to be kind of counter to what you want to do. I'm trying to limit my trips maybe once a week. So there are no limits. It's very state to state here, though, because I hear from a lot of people, like a lot of clients in their state, they're having a lot of supply issues.
But you can get your deliveries, though, can't you? You can still get Whole Foods and you can still get your Amazon deliveries to you.
Yes, but so many people are having so much stuff delivered that everything is booked way out. And so, like, you know, you might place an Instacart or an Amazon order, and instead of coming in a day or 2 days or whatever day, you know, whatever the appropriate amount of time, it might be weeks. You know, Instacart is supposed to come the same day, but it's like Instacart is a program you can shop for groceries and they deliver them. There are other similar programs. You know, it used to be you'd book it in the morning, you get it in the midday. Now it's you book it in the morning, you get it 4 days later. And so they're trying to hire staff to catch that up. I just got a notification that a local Whole Foods is actually closing at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So all afternoon they can just do deliveries. And so I think that people are shaking out how to make this work.
I think that a lot of it is people hoarding, buy more than that they need. So, but which is understandable because no one wants to go out. Kim, if you need toilet paper, I didn't hoard, but you know, buying one pack at one of those box stores will last me an entire year. So I can always send you some.
Thank you. Appreciate that. We're fine because we are fine because I actually did get up very early the other day and go to get in line at Target before they opened, and it worked. And we were fine on toilet paper. The bigger issue was paper towels.
Yeah.
Those things, hard to
find. I use a lot of paper towels when I cook because, especially with chicken or something, I wash my hands. I use paper towels instead of a dish towel.
Yeah.
Because that way I'm just throwing it away. Drying off meat, I use paper towels. I use paper towels a lot. Yeah. So. Yeah.
I find this toilet paper thing weird, though. I can almost understand the initial rush, but why is it still out of stock? People can't still be bulk buying.
I said the
it.
Same thing. I was like, the hoarders have hoarded. What is happening?
Yeah. Well, I actually heard that because nobody's going to work. So,
exactly.
That's, so, that, for work,
so they're just using.
Well, they make those gigantic rolls of single ply garbage toilet paper that are at work. But no one's using that toilet paper. Everybody needs residential size rolls, and they're not tooled to make that many. So they've got to shift from making commercial grade toilet paper to residential grade toilet paper, and plus the panic buying. So there is a shortage of supply, but human nature, it's a weird thing to grasp onto, but I think it's just a control issue. You know?
Yeah, I think it's something people can control in an uncontrollable environment. And luckily for me, as I said, I'm not a hoarder, but I do keep meat in the freezer and stuff. So at the end of February, we went to Piper's Play. Matt's daughter had a play, and we had some friends that came into town, and we cooked ribs, baby back ribs, and wings before we all went to the play. So the very next day, I was going to the box store, and I got replacement ribs and replacement wings. And this was just at the start of the spread of the disease as well here in the U.S. So I had those things in the freezer to begin with and restocked them when I used them.
Yeah, I think like there are a lot of services like ButcherBox and where you can get meat delivered. And I guess so many people started doing that. They are now have a wait list. But one of the things that is coming out of this time in the United States anyway is a lot of people are getting more interested in their food supply chain.
Yeah.
And so in California, I'm in Northern California, but even north of me, about 4 hours up towards Oregon, California is a really big state for anybody that doesn't know. So about 4 hours above me, there are a bunch of farms. And like one of them is called Five Mary's Farm, and they sell direct to the public. They said their number of orders to the public have tripled. So people placing orders to be shipped or to be picked up, and a lot of the restaurant supply farms, because a lot of farms just are like connected to a farm to table restaurant. And so with the restaurants closing down, a lot of those restaurants have started supplying to homes. And so, you know, one of the silver linings is I think a lot of people might get a lot more intimately acquainted with where their food comes from, start to form relationships with food producers. And so I'm actually going to do a blog post about it this week where you can find in your area or as close to your area as I know about a local food producer who you can order directly from.
Kim, I think that's one of the positives of the virus is that I think people are becoming more connected with their food and thinking about where their food is sourced from, because I think we're going to see, because of the timing of this, I think we're going to see a lot more people growing, even if it's one tomato plant. They're going to have some sort of connection with their food so they aren't completely reliant on another source for their food sources.
Mm. Yeah. Although, you know, there is a kind of a bit of a mix. I mean, we can talk about some people are, you see like people loading up their cart with just garbage, just ding-dongs and ho-hos and pancakes, and like it's nothing but horrible for you food.
Christ. That sounds borderline rude, ding-dongs and ho-hos.
All the Americans are like, yeah, ding-dongs, yeah, that's a thing, yeah, ding-dongs. But I do think we're seeing a lot of more, you know, the good things, like John had mentioned, is people are walking, which are good, because there's like, I've lived in my neighborhood for 20 years. I've walked my dog every day. I'm seeing people walking I've never, ever seen before.
Same here.
So that's good.
Yeah, my sister said everyone is out getting their daily allowance of exercise.
And it's an opportunity to, you know, people are learning how to cook. I think we all cook, so it wasn't a big deal for us anyways. But some people now are like, well, I guess I'm going to learn how to cook food. And I heard on another podcast, people that have, you know, more direct ethnic backgrounds, like moved here recently, like Asian and stuff, that they are looking back and saying, well, what did my grandmother make, you know, that kept well, that didn't cost much, and putting more interest into the foods of their, you know, their family lineage. Because, you know, it's like everyone says now, the cliche, like, oh, like our grandparents had behaviors formed during the Depression that they never got rid of. So I think we're going to see those kind of things in what's happening now is, what did you do before COVID? What did you do after COVID? You know, I think people are turning inward because you can't go outward.
So what's been really interesting for me is that exactly what Matt's sort of saying about, you know, being more self-reliant. And certainly what I've noticed, well, obviously before COVID, was still having a Western palate, but in an Asian country. And then the challenge on top of that of being keto in the land of rice and noodle. So it's been a whole world of, you know, adjustments and challenges. So I have been trying to make fresh cheese. So I've been making yogurt, halloumi. My mozzarella is still very dodgy, but it's probably more ricotta. And the next one that I'm going to be making is obviously feta and mascarpone. And that's because, my love of cooking and obviously taking everything back to first principles. And that's part of, obviously, I was saying to my cousin who actually lives in Old Lyme in Connecticut, you know, that we're channeling the great grandmothers, you know, our great great grandmothers, you know, this pioneering spirit. And maybe it's the tenacity of being the Aussie, you know, the Aussie digger fighting spirit and, you know, courage under fire. That, just really having to go back to first principles, particularly, you know, when you've got these challenges and really focusing on, you know, doing the best you can at this time. And it's been a great thing is obviously learning a new skill. And I'm playing with my new Thermomix as well. So I've got all my cool gadgets. I shipped all my cool gadgets. And back on the toilet paper thing, we did a big Costco run before coming here to Thailand. So I stocked up on paper towels and my 40 rolls of toilet paper and all of my other supplies when we had our shipment come over in mid-January. So to all those hoarders, you know, paper toilet, you know, roll hoarders, I'm set with my Costco stash. So
yeah, I think it is interesting that all of us are cooks, but so many people aren't. And I think that's a big learning curve for a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I agree. I think to Matt's point about the people cooking and you know how kids are. Kids want their junk food and their carbs and their chicken fingers. But I will say that all three of his girls have been eating a lot more variety now that they can't go to Wendy's. They can't run down to Wawa and get a sandwich. It's basically how it was when I was growing up. It's like, this is what's for dinner, or you know, this is what we have. So you learn to eat other things. Julia had three eggs the other night for dinner.
Yeah.
That I made for her. Yeah, but she normally wouldn't eat eggs for dinner, but she didn't want what we were having, and that was an option for her.
You just ratted yourself out for being over here, by the way.
I didn't.
Yeah, you said you made her dinner.
I don't believe that law enforcement listens to our podcast.
We're in trouble.
Podcasts.
We're in trouble.
Well, and also the reason for the governor shutting down the state of Delaware is because, as I was saying, it's the home of tax-free shopping. Yeah. They used to have that on their welcoming sign as you entered the state lines. But people from, especially down in the beach area, the Rehoboth Beach area, people were coming over from Maryland to go to the outlets, which was not essential. But, you know, everyone's home. Hey, let's go shopping, to Kim's point. So people were doing that. And people were coming down from Pennsylvania because the liquor stores were closed. And that's just not a good idea. There were lines of people going to go into the liquor stores. It's just crowding liquor stores in upper state Delaware. Yeah.
We also have extremely, extremely expensive resort areas down in our southern county. They had tons of people coming from New York and New Jersey and bringing, so we have a high infection rate down in our southern county because all those people brought it down with them to stay at their beach house. And apparently, you know, they're still living it up down there. And that's not good for us.
I saw someone post a picture. It was a New York Senate license tag.
In Delaware.
And the person was a little bit peeved about it because the person came down from New York to stay in their vacation home during the outbreak of the disease, which I understand wanting to get out of New York, I wouldn't want to be there either. But, you know, if you have the disease or had been in contact with it, now you're spreading it.
Right. Yeah.
That's a huge factor this weekend, being a long weekend public holiday in Australia. And my brother lives in the Australian Capital Territory, so the ACT, and he has a holiday house in New South Wales, which, like Delaware and Pennsylvania, it's just across the border. But because his license is in one state, he's not allowed to go to his holiday home. And the police are out in force this weekend, making sure that everybody is being, doing the social distancing. And they can't do that. And similarly, a politician got caught for changing his principal place of residence to his holiday house. So he tried to circumvent it, but the fact was that he needed to be in the capital city, and he got fined. He got fined $1,000. And it's just not on. They're not above the law, politicians and anyone.
Yeah, it's the same here. They've put extra police out to stop people travelling about. I mean, a lot of the people, I think, did it right at the start. Mm-hmm. I've got gardening customers who I'm not gardening for them because they're doing it themselves because they're down in their holiday home. And like you were saying, I can understand it. Who mm-hmm. would stay in Paris in a flat or whatever property they live in when they've got a huge place down in the country here? You can understand why they do it.
But then go down there and act right that come once along you get with down it. There. You know, they get down to the vacation home and they act like the COVID didn't make it down there, right? And you're like, well, it's there too. Enjoy your big house, but stay in your big house.
Here in the Bay Area, Tahoe and Truckee is about 3 hours from here, and a lot of people will have vacation places there. And I yesterday saw a notice that said, please don't go to your Tahoe Truckee vacation home, mostly because they don't have a lot of hospitals there. So even if they get a few cases there, like Truckee only has a clinic, I don't think it has a hospital, or that it doesn't have very many beds in the hospital. And then you have to go to Reno. And so a lot of these vacation towns are set up to fix a broken leg. They're not set up to deal with pneumonia and COVID issues.
Yeah,
good point. I think it's interesting what you were saying differently about going back to grandmother's cookings, going back to, basic sort of principles. Yeah. I don't know what it's like where you are, but really all over Europe, the metaphors that all the politicians have been using have been wartime metaphors. Mm. It's all, this is a war we're fighting. And it's really going back to the sort of the days of rationing, I think. They're the comparisons that are being made over here.
Yeah.
Besides the growing of vegetables and people reconnecting with their food sources, I think that we're going to see more sales of ball jars this year too. I think that people are going to at least try canning because you know, what happens in the winter if we have another surge of it. Mm. Supposedly, they think that during the summertime that it might go down, but that it might come back in the winter.
Yeah. And people will be comfortable. It's like getting hit by the backside of the hurricane, you know?
I did see that on the graph. Like, there's the first wave, and then there was a second wave. Yeah. And that was the Spanish one in 1918. So there was a second wave for that.
And Matt was saying that same in Singapore, that they flattened the curve, and so they loosened the rules up, and it started coming back.
It came right back, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one of the real risks and why a lot of places are saying we can't loose the restrictions because we'll get a spike. And so everybody's just kind of, in my opinion, in for a slightly longer haul than any of us had in mind.
Well, you get people saying, I'm going to blame them, there's nothing going on. Why do we need to keep doing this? And you're like, well, the reason there's nothing going on is
because we're doing this.
Yeah. Like, the second we stop doing this, it's going to come racing through, you know. And I don't know, I don't want to get into the politics, but there's some weird views in America about what comes first. And it doesn't seem like people worried about money, and I don't know, what good's money if you're gone?
Well, there are some interesting theories about how to deal with it, because sooner or later
we're going to have to go out.
You've got to loosen up on it a bit, because otherwise everywhere's just going to die economically.
Yeah,
I mean, I read a post that France is now in recession for the first time in 6 years. It's, it's seen a downward trend for the last 2 months, I think, something like that. There's some boxes you have to check to say that you're officially in recession. But how long can it go on? And it is interesting thinking about how it's going to be managed, because it can't we can't get rid of it that quickly, and we're not going to get a vaccine that quickly. So I think at some point, the restrictions are going to have to be loosened, and we're going to have to manage that roller coaster graph, but hopefully with much gentler inclines.
I mean, one of the things I know Richard Morris is talking about quite a bit is looking at who actually has some immunity, who might have had a non-symptomatic case and who has some immunity, and being able to use the people with some resistance to start to be out more and kind of go through cycles. So there's a lot of stuff under the surface being discussed, I think, about what could be the future, but it's still super early days.
That's why testing's so important, isn't it? Yeah. Because until we test really widely, we don't actually know what the situation really truly is.
Right. There's a big rumor going on that it came to California in November originally. And so, because California gets a lot of travel from Asia and China specifically. Yeah. And so there was this theory, because a lot of people, myself included, quite honestly, were like, I had a really bad flu in, you know, X month. And, you know, what's going, you know, what could it be? And so Stanford, a local medical center and university, but the Stanford Medical Center was running antibody tests on people to do a study to see. And apparently there are few people who tested positive, but they could have it for the antibodies, but they could have gotten it very recently and been asymptomatic, but there were not large numbers of people that already had it. And they were all people that said, well, I had a flu. So, but it's an interesting theory to pursue.
There are a couple of real interesting studies that are in the process at the moment. Yeah. I watch John Campbell on YouTube. He does a global update every day, and he talks about some other things. He does some extra videos as well. And there are two studies. There's one going on in a town in Italy, fairly small town. I think it has a population of 1,900. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they have closed it, literally closed it off. You can't leave and nobody can come in. And they are testing everybody, and they're taking different notes about what kind of symptoms they had, the experience they had. So they will be able to use this population to get a really good model that they can extrapolate out from. And there's also a study being done in the UK. I forget the name of the place that's doing it, but they're testing randomly 800 people across the whole of the country, just testing them, these random people, and that will give them a good indication, again, to extrapolate out for the rest of the population. And the results of those should be in, I think, within a few days. And they're going to be really, really interesting.
I was telling Matt that for all we know that all of us have already had it. His daughter was in China last summer. She was sick while she was in China. She's had the flu this year.
Yeah. I was thinking about that the other day.
His wife has had the flu. I've had like slight headaches here, you know, a sore throat there. Just soon I have any symptom whatsoever, I take a zinc lozenge and put it in my mouth and hopefully stop any virus from multiplying in me. You know, I've had probably a little bit of a runny nose, even though that's not a symptom, but I've had a little bit of a runny nose for probably the past month, just here and there. For all I know, it's like I could have contracted it and my body's fighting it. We just don't know.
Right. And I think one of the concerns that some people have is we have this tendency to be like, well, maybe I had it. And maybe you want to be really careful about the next thought, which is, so I'm less likely to get it now.
Right.
And then that can lead to people start to engaging in behaviors that put them at higher risk because they have this sort of optimistic streak that maybe they're a little bit immune.
Yeah. And my big thing, as I've been saying, is say I've had it and now I'm immune, which they still don't have confirmation that you can't get it back because there's studies that say people are testing positive again after being negative. But I'm still a vector. Like if I get it on my hands and I go out in public and put my hand on a rail, I'm not going to get it, but I can still give it to the next person that touches the handrail. So I think that level of comfort that Kim is talking about is something to be concerned of, that I'm immune, but still carry it on you. So logistically, it's going to be a nightmare.
I think Andrew had it. But anyway, we don't know because he didn't get tested. But the reason that we think that something happened back in mid-February, so this is obviously it already been through China and some of the restrictions had happened. And he took a work trip up to the north of Thailand to Chiang Mai. Andrew has an aura ring. So he was obviously, you know, he's a data junkie, so he just loves his data. So he sort of actually had a look at the aura ring data on his temperature. So he could really clearly see this elevation and spike in temperature.
Lou, you may want to explain what that ring is, because I don't know what that is. What is it?
It's one of those, personal data monitoring devices, but it's a ring.
Oh,
biometric ring. Okay, gotcha.
It's the one ring that fits them all.
Gotcha.
Thing. So, it tracks your sleep, your heart rate variability, and it also tracks your temperature. Because we don't actually have a temperature probe here, but I tried to take his temperature with a meat probe, but he wouldn't let me.
Where did you stick it?
I don't want to stick it anywhere where I might want to stick it again in a piece of meat. Anyway, so that's beside the point. But the aura ring, the one ring that rules them all, actually sort of gave him this actual sort of, trajectory that you could actually see that he had this temperature. But he didn't have the COVID symptoms. He did actually have a productive cough. Obviously, he had a fever. But, he wasn't necessarily, having the night sweats and all that sort of stuff. But he certainly had maybe a mild sort of thing. But that really picks up your point about, these behaviours. But being in an Asian country, we do wear masks all the time, but we wear them for pollution. But the filters, I've got the super duper particulate filters. So whenever we go out, we have to wear them in supermarkets. We have to wear them if we're on public transport. So I got temperature checked on the way into the supermarket today. You get temperature checked when you go into anywhere that you're out. Lots of hand sanitizer everywhere for free at the stores. So you're not necessarily taking these, taking too many risks, but the social distancing or the one, the 6 feet between people is marked out in supermarkets, but it's not necessarily when you're in a very big, large city, it's sometimes quite hard to do that. So, and you can see why the government is doing what they're doing with clamping down on gatherings and shopping mall centres, that sort of thing.
I think that one of the positives coming out of the virus, or hopefully one of the positives that will come out of the virus, is maybe, just maybe, that folks will realize that we are all in this together, that everyone, it's not discriminatory. It doesn't matter what country you're living in. It doesn't matter your nationality, your ethnicity. It affects everyone. We are all the same. And it gives us a common thing to fight.
Although, interestingly, I've been reading a few articles and, again, listening to John Campbell in the dramatic difference with the incidence rate percentage in the African American communities compared to the population. So I think he was talking about Chicago, and something like 68% of the cases were the African Americans, but the population was much lower. So they seemed to be faring, much more poorly as far as COVID-19 was going. He had a few theories about that. He's talking a lot about vitamin D. He was talking a lot about other things like, socioeconomic differences and things like that. But he was quite interested in vitamin D and the fact that the darker your skin is, the harder it is for your body to produce it from sunlight. And especially in Chicago was where he was talking about, and coming out of the winter, that everybody's levels of D are probably very low, but it might be particularly low in that population. I found these things fascinating, as well as quite worrying.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of sort of dissent and discussion, but there's a lot of strife within the states about characterizing the racial differentials as a issue such as that versus, is there a economic component, a social status, access to jobs. And so it can get up to be very politicized. It's a hard discussion to have without it sort of delving into some very contentious areas at times, which is one of the realities of the layers of discussion.
I wonder if this experience that we're all having is going to peel some of those layers back and maybe bring them up for discussion.
Oh, we're way peeled back. We're way peeled back here in America right now. We were in we're very divided and stuff right now. So there, I think you've got the people that are very focused on, like, these things have been brought to the forefront, and there's people that are using the political climate in the United States to say things that they used to not say out loud. So we're in a weird mix of, at least now we know who, that these people have these beliefs. and we, you know, get to try to shine some light on them and fix them. But I don't know. It's a weird time right now.
To get the resources and links from this show, please go to ketowomenpodcast.com/episodes. Please share this podcast with as many people as possible by sharing one of my links or just taking a screenshot of an episode that you enjoyed. Reviews really help raise the profile of the podcast, which gets it in front of more people, but also helps me attract a wide variety of guests. So please take a minute to leave a review on whichever podcast app or platform you like to listen on. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share, and comment on my posts. Your support really does mean the world to me. Thank you. Are you enjoying this podcast? Help me make more episodes and videos by making a pledge at my Patreon page, patreon.com/ketowomen. Or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman Podcast website. Don't forget to join in the fun on the Keto Woman Podcast Instagram and Facebook pages and Daisy_KetoWoman on Twitter. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you would like to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomenpodcast.com. This week's end quote is from Ralph Waldo Emerson. Life is a train of moods like a string of beads, and as we pass through them, they prove to me many coloured lenses which paint the world their own hue, and each shows only what lies in its focus. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.